I want to welcome Agile XRM to the podcast. I've known the people at Agile XRM for the past 12 years. I've seen how their business process management tool can add massive value to complex organizational processes in sectors such as finance and government. If you have complex processes or a need for dialogues on the Power Platform or Dynamics 365, take a look at how this BPM tool can add value. You can find them at agilexrm.com or check out the show notes for more details. Welcome to the Power Platform Show. Thanks for joining me today. I hope today's guest inspires and educates you on the possibilities of the Microsoft Power Platform. Now, let's get on with the show. Welcome to the Power Platform Show. In this episode, I want to talk about Procode. What's the on-ramp for Procode developers in the context of the Power Platform? Why should, you know, pro developers, or let's say .NET developers, C-sharp developers, etc., consider the Power Platform as part of their tooling? What do they need to know? What are the risks of it? And this is going to be a part of a 5 to 10 part series where I interview pro developers, people that come from a .NET type background or a, you know, very much code first experience, and how they've come to the Power Platform, and what are the advantages, disadvantages, cliffs, and walls that you don't want to run into. So today's guest is from Texas in the United States. He's a chief executive officer at Boldart Consulting. He is a best-selling author and SAP mentor. He's 20 years of software engineering experience, a deep understanding of SAP products and technologies, as well as how that integrates then to the Microsoft stack. You can find links to his bio, social media, etc., in the show notes for this episode. Welcome to the show, James.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you on the show, James. I'm interested in embarking on this journey of unpacking the story with you. Before we start there, though, tell me a bit about food, family, and fun.
Yeah, food I enjoy too much. So I'm definitely a foodie. I like to cook a lot. So, you know, I have varying degrees of success, but I like to try a lot of different types of cuisines and experiment, much to my family's chagrin. I guess let's segue into family. So my wife and I, so we actually started the company together. We've been married since 1999. We have 4 kids, so we keep pretty busy. Our kids, we have 2 in college and 2 in junior high right now. And so that pretty much takes up the balance of everything else. So.
Wow. And tell us a bit about the best things to do in Texas.
Texas is, it's miserable in the summer, but for the other 9 months, it's pretty great. It's not uncommon to be in shorts at Christmas and, you know, they kind of have a fairly moderate climate throughout. So, there's, always struggle when people say, you know, what should I come visit? I mean, there's kind of your, you know, not a whole lot to really sightsee, but, it's a good time just to, we've got a pretty diverse ecosystem here. So you can go east and see lots and lots of tall trees. You can go west and run into the desert pretty quickly. So it's kind of choose your own adventure.
Nice. Tell me, when you're not working, what do you do for fun outside of family?
I'm a techie, so I do actually program outside of work for fun. I'm just, I guess, nerdy that way. So enjoy kind of maybe some of the technologies that don't get a chance to do in an enterprise setting. So, I'll tinker with, Raspberry Pi devices and Python and all that kind of stuff. So
nice. Yeah. How did you get to the point, because I know you got a very strong SAP background, how did you get to the point of working on the Microsoft stack?
Yeah, so it was kind of a strange confluence of events. SAP actually tapped me, this is probably 2013, I suppose, to write the book on what is now known as SAP Cloud, or well, SAP Business Technology Platform. And that's kind of the SAP version of Azure for those scoring at home. As we were kind of getting integrated with that team, as they were getting that solution off the ground, they were working pretty extensively with hyperscalers, including Microsoft. So, kind of early adoption transition into the Azure world. And then sort of simultaneously, we were working with SAP's OEM group at the time and kept bumping into Salesforce, but also Microsoft and you know, back in the XRM days, you know, looking at, you know, SAP was trying to bring in a lot of people into the SAP ecosystem that were kind of, before low code was really much of a thing. That's kind of what, you know, people were on the lookout for from a platform perspective. And so, you know, got an up close look at Dynamic CRM and the whole XRM motion. And we were really impressed with what we saw and, you know, kind of spur of the moment decided, you know, this is something we think can really, you know, extend the reach of what we do for a lot of our customers, and started our Microsoft consulting practice and have kind of been at it ever since. And, you know, what was kind of interesting, you know, for first several years, we're kind of off in our own lane. You know, we had our SAP projects going on over here, Dynamics over there. And then, you know, the past 3 or 4 years, we've just seen a ton of convergence, you know, working with, you know, either Power Platform or Dynamics to extend the reach of SAP, or, you know, maybe even zooming out and looking across the enterprise. So it's a little bit of SAP and Workday and Salesforce and, you know, everything in between, and Power Platform is kind of the glue that, if you will, that kind of, you know, connects everything together.
Yeah, amazing. I've spent the last couple of years doing a lot around SAP and the Power Platform and that story in market. And of course, your name came up early on as seems to be the gurus globally in the space and in the work that you've done between SAP and the Microsoft stack. I would like to have you back and let we do an episode just around that. Let's unpack that SAP Microsoft story from your perspective. I know you've created a bunch of tooling and stuff in that space, so let's take a look at that. But today, I would like to unpack the story of pro developers and the Power Platform. And the reason the story is topical for me and has been something brewing for a couple of months now is that I started my career in 2003 with MS CRM, right? And so it was the very early days of Dynamics, before it was called Dynamics. And there used to be heaps of resources from Microsoft about how a .NET developer could start to use this technology to build apps, because it meant that apps could be built faster and the business value gained a lot quicker when the kind of the plumbing had been taken care of in building those solutions. And Microsoft used to have training material, et cetera, for, you know, if you're coming from the .NET world, how did you onboard? Because back then, there was a software development kit, you know, it was all on-prem days before the cloud, et cetera, and it was quite different. And there were very tight rules around, you weren't allowed to do SQL injections and things like this. You had to follow the process to create a stable platform, and came across many scenarios where .NET developers would look at it, go, hey, I know .NET, it's a Microsoft test, you know, tool, it's written in .NET, man, let's get in there, no worries. And they broke it back in those days. So Microsoft released a lot of content, a how-to for developers in the traditional sense of developers could build solutions rapidly on the Power Platform. Fast forward to today, none of that seems to exist anymore. You've got developers, let's say, you know, in some cases, I'm seeing being forced onto a Power Platform project. You know, let's say they're in a big financial institution, they're part of the development team, might be a team of 60-odd developers in that team, and they're like, hey, we're going to adopt the Power Platform now, you need to learn it. And the first thing they're like, you what? This is restrictive. This is going to, you know, stop me doing what I do as a developer. And I feel that I want to kind of, because I've seen the other side of it where I've seen pro developers that understand the Power Platform and, you know, its history from XRM perspective, and they go, oh my gosh, this is going to allow me to get time to value so much quicker. But what's not clear for these developers coming in fresh is where are those cliffs where it doesn't play like they would expect it to play? Where are those, you know, walls that they're going to run into and bloody their nose on and then get disheartened with the platform because it's almost like they didn't know, and so they had to fall over or stumble into it to get to that point. And so with that in mind, if you were talking to a pro developer, how would you tell them the benefits of the Power Platform and that it should be part of their tool set? Being that part of their tool set will be Azure, M365, and then any other, you know, outside the Microsoft ecosystem tooling that they might be working with as well.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, it really boils down to productivity. You know, I think anytime you're dealing with an opinionated framework like this, you know, you're going to have pushback from pro-code developers that, you know, I remember I got my programming start in the Java space, and I remember working with a gentleman that he was amazing with assembly language, and he swore up and down that, you know, give me any requirement and I can code circles around any C, C++, Java developer in assembly language. And, you know, maybe he could do that, maybe he couldn't, but, you know, it was always, you know, this conversation around the level of abstraction. You know, if I can have a framework, you know, a toolkit, you know, something like, you know, the early days of XRM and, you know, kind of what was provided there, then, you know, I'm eliminating a lot of that boilerplate stuff that, you know, I think a lot of pro code developers like to talk about. Oh, you know, I can plow through that really quickly. And, you know, I think the reality is when you start to look back and, you know, the amount of time it takes to build a web app from the ground up, you know, even proficient React or, you know, Blazor developers, you know, there is, I think, a lot more there than I think a lot of pro code developers really account for. And so, you know, what we've kind of looked at is, okay, you know, there are places where low code doesn't make sense, but, you know, when we take a project as a whole, you know, how many different areas of that project can we knock out? Just for us, I mean, at Bodark, since we've started down this path, I mean, I would say conservatively, we've seen a 60% increase in productivity, you know, in terms of the types of projects that we're delivering. And so now the question becomes, you know, what do I do with that excess time? You know, whereas before it might have taken me 3 months to build a responsive web app, now maybe I can get it done in half that time, and now I've got some additional time in my hands. Some customers may just pocket that money, but others might be willing to go a little bit further. You know, now can I unlock maybe some, you know, opportunistic AI injection and, you know, try to push the envelope in terms of innovation a little bit more. And so, you know, I think there's, you know, it's understandable. I mean, you know, for developers have just been accustomed to having infinite freedom to build solutions the way that they like, to have that natural, you know, bit of resistance. But is it at the end of the day that fundamentally different from, you know, a lot of frameworks out there? I mean, even programming environments. I mean, Python is very, you know, you always hear, you know, is that the Pythonic way of doing this? You know, it is very opinionated. And so, you know, I think sometimes it just takes, you know, a little bit of recalibration in your brain of maybe this is not as foreign as I think it is, you know, at the end of the day.
So when we think about time to value or business, you know, benefits realization in any software development project, what are the advantages and disadvantages you're getting here by using the Power Platform over building from bare metal, or maybe not that low, but, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one that comes to mind initially is just, you know, the amount of investment that Microsoft is putting back into the framework. You know, if I build a model-driven app 2 years ago, you know, just the innovations that have come about in the past 18 to 24 months, you know, I'm getting that constant modernization, you know, the new look and feel, you know, additional controls, additional pieces of functionality to where, you know, the overall O&M of these apps, I think, it, you know, it's changing quite a bit. You know, there's just so much there that, you know, I can maybe stretch my budget a little bit further with these investments and building on these tools. And, you know, I think Microsoft has done a very good job of, you know, I've heard Charles Amana talk about, you know, that no cliffs philosophy and, mm-hmm. you know, just the idea of always got an escape hatch. I could always, you know, throw in some C#. I can, you know, call out to Azure. I can do other things that, you know, make sure that I don't code myself into a corner. You know, and that's been my experience. I mean, you know, since I've worked with the platform, I mean, like any framework, I think you have to learn to think in that framework to a certain extent, mm-hmm. you know, from a user experience perspective. You know, I think one of the things we struggle with a lot is, you know, how much of this is synchronous versus asynchronous. You know, there's maybe several different ways to get to end of job. What's the most optimal user experience? Because there are going to be some things that, you know, I don't know, do I incorporate custom pages into my model-driven app, and what sort of complexities that come with? And, you know, like any framework, there's some trade-offs there. But I think, you know, once you kind of learn to think in that framework, that you can really stretch those investments, I think, further than you can just a pure bare metal, you know, pro code style solution.
What about, no software these days stands alone. It's always part of an ecosystem of applications where, you know, back-end solutions has to be integrated. What's the integration surface like from a pro developer's perspective using or adopting the Power Platform?
Yeah, I mean, the tooling, of course, you know, is, I think Microsoft has done a good job of taking some of the ALM innovations in and around Power Platform and continuing to incorporate those into Azure DevOps so that, you know, your makers and your pro code developers can kind of coexist in the same ecosystem and maybe use some of the same tooling. I mean, it's not that it's perfect, but I think, you know, that's been a major benefit. And I think, you know, at the Azure level in particular, when it comes to integration, connectivity, just the seamless way that, you know, things like Azure API management, I can, you know, I have very simple wizards essentially that can take some of these complex APIs that we might be surfacing from on-premises backend system, things like that, and easily incorporate those into the Power Platform. So there's that, you know, nice separation of concerns between pro code developers and makers so that I think each can kind of play to their respective strengths. And you know, I'm excited to kind of see where Microsoft continues to take this. You know, I've seen some demonstrations of where they're trying to go with tooling and, you know, PowerApp Studio, for example, having more of that collaborative authoring experience. You know, I'm hoping that's kind of the beginning of much more to come there to where, you know, we can have some of these different experiences because, you know, at least in my experience, I mean, the types of solutions we're building, you know, Fusion Teams is absolutely the name of the game. And we have, for example, with our SAP development, you know, we have SAP architects, we have Power Platform architects, in some cases, Azure business analysts, you know, people coming from all different walks of life and, you know, being able to pull all those resources together. It's a different motion, you know, because no one person necessarily has the complete picture end to end of how the solution is going to work. So, you know, that collaboration becomes, you know, much more imperative than it might have been in the past, I think.
What are the limitations? As in, if you're talking to a dev going into this and you said, listen, just be aware, there's this, this, and this you need to be aware of, and you need to consider how you would work around these limitations.
I think for us, you know, a lot of times it's managing expectations on the part of customers, understanding that a Power Platform solution might not be 100% low code. You know, I can certainly, you know, try to take advantage of Canvas apps and PowerFX and, you know, a host of low code type tools. But I think once you get to a certain level of complexity, you know, for us, it's approximately 70-30 between low code and pro code. You know, there has to be some level of architecture in place. I think, you know, once you get past, you know, your basic three screen Canvas app or, you know, one off more simple solutions, you know, the minute we kind of put a toe into the enterprise space, now it's going to be a little bit more of a collaborative experience. It's going to require more of that deep architecture. And so, you know, does that change at the end of the day the value that the Power Platform brings? Personally, I don't think so. But I know for some customers, it's like, well, you know, now I'm kind of in this hybrid model and, you know, maybe there's some feelings that they're not getting the full value. You know, I thought this was going to be purely low code and, you know, I could park any citizen maker in front of it. And that's probably not a realistic expectation.
Yeah. So what else? What are the other limitations?
Yeah, I think as it relates to scale with licensing, a lot of times that's something that we run into where if I build a solution from the ground up with ProCode, I have a lot of flexibility in terms of how I distribute that, you know. So a lot of customers that are new to Power Platform, I think, you know, they have a hard time understanding the difference between Power Apps and, say, a Power Pages, you know, for building something that might be customer facing or, you know, kind of a mixed audience of users that are coming in. And so there's some challenges there in terms of, you know, how far can you take the platform? But I think a lot of that can be mitigated just with some of that careful upfront architecture, you know, and understanding of this is kind of where the platform, you know, has its strengths and, you know, how do we fill in the gaps with pro code to get to end of job?
any application that you build is going to need some type of storage in some shape or form, data storage. Dataverse, a lot of people coming outside touching this for the first time are like, what is this? Like, is it SQL? Is it, you know, what is it? So once again, talking to a developer, how do you set up or premise Dataverse and its function in the development mix?
You know, I think it's looking at it from a more business object level, in my opinion. You know, for years, we've always had, you know, just our basic SQL access, you know, Azure SQL or on-premises SQL server. And, you know, maybe if I'm doing C# development, I've got some different libraries that I can bring to into the mix to abstract away some of that. But, you know, even if I'm talking about ORM, there's a fundamental difference between, you know, some of those database level libraries versus a full-fledged business object framework. And that's really, you know, what I view Dataverse as. I mean, sure, I've got, you know, all the storage capabilities you can imagine, but the power of being able to create custom tables and the minute I activate those, have them be part of a robust RESTful API, you know, OData V4 that I can access. You know, I don't have to necessarily go through the low-code tools, you know, Power Apps, et cetera, to access that. You know, so that's a very powerful capability. And I think, you know, what Microsoft's done a really nice job of is just stacking more and more functionality on top of it. You know, I can define business rules. I can define, you know, graphical interfaces. I can, you know, take advantage of some of the deep integration that's there with Azure services. You know, so, you know, if I want to, you know, extend the reach, for example, in Cosmos DB and, you know, create tables, you know, virtualized tables, things like that, you know, that's, you know, a place where, you know, that level of abstraction that exists with the business objects, you know, really gives me a lot of power to maybe shield my citizen makers from some of the you know, complex, you know, ugliness that exists and, you know, back in business systems and kind of provide everyone with a level playing field to draw from as they're building apps. You know, short answer to your question, I just think, you know, there's so much there that goes above and beyond SQL storage, you know, that I think Dataverse kind of almost gets a bad rap. People don't quite know what to make of it. But there's just so much powerful functionality there.
You touched on the word virtualization there. And in the context of Dataverse, what does that mean? What's the opportunity? We touched on SAP at the start. And of course, most organizations, I assume, don't want to, as a rule, either mirror their data or replicate their data, because now you're paying for at least storage costs twice.
Right.
Tell us about why Dataverse virtualization is important and what's your lens on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as you touched on, you know, there's just a natural hesitancy on the part of customers to mirror their data. And, you know, I think, of course, there's so many different virtualization options these days. But take, for example, the recent innovations around being able to integrate virtual tables from Fabric. You know, now I've got, you know, if I'm a customer that's built a, you know, modern data lakehouse in Fabric and I've got all my data there, you know, it's such an accelerator for Power Platform development where the data is already accessible. You know, I can very easily tap into what's already there, you know, my pre-existing investments in Fabric. And now, you know, it's a little bit of, you know, just add your low-code magic and maybe some, you know, one-off connector API calls to really build a full-fledged solution so much faster than going back to your question of limitations before, you know, even though there's 1,200 connectors out of the box, for a certain level of complexity for an app, if I'm having to build all my interactions with the backend system through connectors, it's messy. Mm. You know, I've got to, you know, hydrate data from a lot of different sources, and, you know, there's performance implications that are associated with all of that. You know, and so that virtualization really does take away a lot of that complexity to a point where I've already got my data now. You know, it's just I need to plug in my application logic, and, you know, maybe I have a few connector callouts to do an update on a, you know, equipment record or something like that, as opposed to having to build it all from scratch.
So you touch on another interesting thing there, which is performance. And I suppose part of performance then is also scale. You know, what if I have an application with 10 terabyte of data? Is it going to be slowed down when I'm going to, you know, run reporting or other business logic across that? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, performance is always a major consideration. And getting back to the fabric thing, I mean, that's one of the things that we've been so excited about is, you know, being able to really harness the capabilities of that engine to, you know, mitigate some of those challenges. I mean, especially, you know, for the type of work we do in the SAP space, it's not uncommon to tap into tables that have literally billions of records in them. And so, you know, helping a citizen maker understand that a search box on top of this, you know, you can't run a wide open search on that data. You're going to really start to crawl. You know, we can smooth out some of those rough edges on the back end and, you know, take advantage of some of the capabilities in Azure to, you know, maybe paginate through the data a little bit more smoothly, define more intelligent filters, you know, all those kinds of things that probably don't want to do that in PowerFX. You want to have, you know, a layer underneath that that's kind of brokering that communication, I think.
And sizing data storage directly within Dataverse. I know you've got the ultimate unlimited extensibility when you go to Fabric, but do you see any limitations on where if you're architecting a solution, you're going to go, you know what, we're going to bring Fabric into the mix early rather than later, if that's not even, you know, a strategy at the customer? How do you decide that type of thing where you feel that you're going to go beyond the capacity of what you want to do in Dataverse?
It's an interesting question. I think one of the interesting things we've seen, I mean, it feels like every customer you walk into kind of has a different take or you know, approach to this. But, you know, as the Power Platform environment concept has become a little bit more well understood, you know, among customers, we're seeing a lot of breakdowns of data mart is not quite the right term, but, you know, imagine an environment per department within the business, being able to kind of slice and dice it, you know, along those lines and then use either APIs or other measures of integration to, you know, instead of having kind of the traditional monolithic, massive ERP size database experience, it's a little bit more composable ERP, if you will. You know, we're kind of bringing a lot of these solutions together across these different departments and, you know, mixing and matching them in a lot of pretty clever ways. You know, it's kind of interesting to see how that has evolved. And, you know, it's probably a little bit too early days to really have a clear, you know, those old enterprise integration patterns books, you know, that used to exist that talked about, you know, the best practices around this. And, you know, I think it really does vary. And, you know, I think people are coming up with a lot of creative ways to approach that.
So another thing I've come across quite a bit in the industry is that you go into an enterprise organization, they've got their own development teams. They have been developing on XYZ applications. Generally, SAP is always in the mix of that. And they want their developers to cross-skill and be able to build solutions. And I'm talking about solutions that are way more complex than a citizen developer is ever going to do, right? They might want to rationalize their app landscape. They might want to get rid of apps that are still on-prem. You know, they haven't, and they don't want to just lift and shift them to the cloud. They want them to be, you know, if you like, PaaSified or SaaSified at least.
Yeah.
And if we look at those developers, and let's say they could have it, as I said, they could be come from SAP, they could come from Pega, they could have come from any one of the, you know, Oracle. How do you best guide them into a skills development path to get them up to speed as quickly as possible, while not teaching them to go, you need to go learn low code, because they're like, what? You know, like, nah, you're kidding me, right? Like, how do you get, like, if you're like, be respectful of their knowledge
right
already and not try and teach them to suck eggs and taking them back to what a citizen developer would, because, you know, it's offensive
sure
to them. So how do you take them on that journey, or what would you recommend?
You know, I think, I mean, your mileage will vary here, but I think, you know, one of the things that we've talked about with a lot of developers, both our internal developers as well as, you know, developers at customers, is, you know, let's take a step outside of, you know, the little biospheres that we live in. You know, in our case, you know, a lot of times it's SAP. SAP COEs typically exist in a bubble, and they don't necessarily play well with others.
Yep.
And so, you know, when you zoom out and look at this from the enterprise perspective, we kind of liken it to a solar system a little bit. You know, you have all these different constellations, and SAP is an enormous planet that has, you know, this gravity well that sucks in a lot of stuff that it probably shouldn't at the end of the day. But, you know, if we start looking at this holistically, I mean, the reality is all these different little pockets of COEs are not able to keep up with the demands of the business. And so, you know, how do you start to reimagine what this looks like? And of course, you know, from our perspective, I mean, maybe we drink the Microsoft Kool-Aid, but, you know, thinking about, you know, kind of putting Azure and Power Platform at the center of a lot of this, you know, now I'm starting to reimagine what scale looks like. You know, if a customer has SAP, Workday, Salesforce, all these different systems on-premise, homegrown, et cetera, you know, if I put, you know, something at the center of that, and I start to cultivate, you know, those common skill sets, then I'm not taking away your pro code development. I'm probably unlocking all kinds of new opportunities. And so, you know, it's a matter of kind of, you know, redistributing that load, I would say, and maybe getting a lot of pro code developers out of some routine tasks that aren't really value add, and they're probably not enjoying it at the end of the day anyway. You know, I'm really, I'll use SAP as another example here. I mean, there's so much proprietary stuff in SAP to build forms and workflows and all these different things. And you know, those technologies, I mean, there are people that have literally made a career out of all I do is forms development. And I've learned this proprietary framework to the fullest extent possible. And, you know, those developers, you're going to have a hard time, you know, convincing to reimagine things. But for others, you know, the name of the game is building APIs. And, you know, if I can, you know, let them focus there, then all of a sudden I've unlocked their time to work on all kinds of other interesting, more value added kind of things. And so, you know, it's, I guess, a little bit like economic theory is, you know, am I taking away jobs or am I actually creating jobs?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the use case that's jumping to mind for me is the developers don't really have a choice outside of resigning and leaving the company if they're that anti, you know, this journey that these enterprise accounts are going on. And so let's say I'm a dev, I've got, you know, 15 years experience in something else. Might not even be Microsoft, it might be .NET as well. How quickly can I be super productive and adopt all the rich benefits of the Power Platform if I'm coming from that kind of lens? And is there any kind of resources that you would recommend go do this? Or have you got any stories from the field of where perhaps you've got a use case that you could talk about that where you've taken people on this journey?
I would almost say I think it depends on your willingness to really jump in with both feet. You know, there's so many opportunities. It's absurdly easy to get, you know, set up in your own development environment. And, you know, Microsoft documentation, I mean, having worked in a lot of different ecosystems, I mean, the stuff in Microsoft Learn is fantastic. You know, you can have guided study. There's detailed documentation to kind of walk you through, you know, whichever lane you want to go down. And, you know, in terms of Power Apps, you know, Canvas apps, Power Automate, you know, whatever your preference is. So much video tutorials. I mean, YouTube is a, you know, wonderful resource. You know, that was a lot of how I got started, quite frankly, is, you know, started kind of tinkering with this. And, you know, there's so many in the space that are just talking about the community in general. I think it's a pretty special community. I think that there's just so much of a willingness, you know, and maybe it's a function of that pro code, low code unite concept where, you know, you have people that are coming at this from a lot of different angles, and they like to share their knowledge, and they like to showcase, you know, this is what I'm working on, you know, here's some challenges I face, and, you know, all of those things, you know, I think make that journey in terms of, you know, timing, you know, to your question, I think we've seen some of our pro code developers really come up to speed and be pretty productive within a month.
Wow.
But it depends on motivation, you
yeah,
know.
Of course,
if
of
they're
course.
Fighting it every step of the way, then, mm-hmm. then maybe not so much. But you know, a lot of these concepts are, you know, Microsoft has done a good job of kind of building on. You know, you think about Power Automate. Well, it's basically logic apps at the end of the day. So mm-hmm. you know, if you're an Azure developer that has, you know, exposure to some of those technologies, might not be as big of a leap as you might think. And you know, I think that's another part of this that, you know, your skills start to translate well. Power Query, you know, maybe tinkering in Excel, and all of a sudden I find, you know, very productive in Power BI too, and, you know, now Fabric and Data Factory and all of that. And yeah, I think the same thing goes for Power FX, that, you know, there's a lot of this that just kind of builds on top of it. And, you know, of course you always have that escape hatch out, you know, so our C# developers, I mean, the way they approach some of the solutions are a little different. I mean, there's maybe a little more tendency to, I'll just write a plugin for that, you know, and I don't know that, you know, there's a right or wrong way to do some of this, you know, depending on, you know, the level of complexity. And I think the framework is very forgiving in terms of, you know, providing 3 to 5 different ways to solve any given problem. And so you just kind of have to find the one that plays to your respective strengths.
Yeah, epic. James, it's been great talking to you, and it'll be great to have you back to really just unpack the SAP Power Platform story. Before I let you go, I'll let you have the final word around what haven't we discussed that we should have today?
It's a good question. I think can't go to any podcast these days and not touch an AI base at some point. So, you know, I think that's something that's starting to add another dimension to a lot of this. And of course, Copilot is, you know, front of mind for all things Microsoft. But those tools, I think, are probably, I still feel like we're kind of early days, but, you know, I can't tell you how amazed I've been, you know, being in GitHub Copilot, some of these different tools. And, you know, for myself, you know, I'm not a data engineer by trade, but, you know, being able to get into Fabric and, you know, fire up a Jupyter notebook and kind of have Copilot walk me through Spark development and things like that. It's, I think, you know, the future of this, if we have this conversation 5 years from now, I would submit it's probably going to be even more pro code friendly than it is today.
Hey, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Business Application MVP Mark Smith, otherwise known as the NZ365 Guy. If there's a guest you'd like to see on the show, please message me on LinkedIn. If you want to be a supporter of the show, please check out buymeacoffee.com/NZ365 Guy. Stay safe out there and shoot for the stars.